just go ahead now. But there's diamonds in his pockets, and that's a rip now. This one said he wants to buy you rockets, ain't in his head now.
Another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. Good to have you here with us. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballengee, and you can get a hold of Golf News Net on every social media service you can think of at Golf News Net. And you can find a lot of my work at golfnewsnet.com, as well as Yahoo Sports' Double Ball Golf Blog. And we're presented by BetDSI.com. We use their odds each and every week on our PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, European Tour, you name it. Our odds posts each and every week because they give us a great idea of where the money is moving in real time and how the odds affect that movement, or are affected by that movement. So even if you're in a jurisdiction where you can't bet legally on sports online or in person, you can use this information to help you in your fantasy golf games and in your pools each and every week. So check out BetDSI.com. Okay, so we haven't done a pod in a little while, and I wanted to get one in the can before we go to the Players Championship next week. So that's a little out of the ordinary news. I mean, we go to a handful of tournaments every year, but this year, the first tournament of the year is going to be the Players' Championship. We're getting together with the PGA Tour and a handful, I think it's actually going to be about seven of us all together, golf writers, bloggers, whatever we're called nowadays, and we're going to get together in one house for the week. So we have a couple of guys from No Laying Up, Tron Carter and Chris Solomon, Kyle Porter from CBS Sports, Brendan Porath from SB Nation, me, Shane Bacon was coming. I don't think he's in now. Adam Sarson, who is the GIF King, or GIF King, whatever the hell it's called, from The Score up in Canada, and he runs his own website, adamsarson.com. Hopefully I'm saying his last name right. I've never met him in person. So this is going to be pretty exciting. We're going to get to get a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff from the Players' Championship. We'll obviously cover the golf tournament while we're down there. We'll do some podcasts. Probably all have one episode of our own podcasts where we're all talking to each other. Or maybe it'll just be one jointly posted episode where we all just take the same cut. I don't know what that's going to look like. But I'm really excited about it. It's a little bit different way to cover a tournament. Last year at the Ryder Cup, I got together with a number of people in a house in Chaska. Just 3 or 4 miles from Hazeltine National. I got together with Teddy Greenstein and Kevin Van Valkenburg and Stephanie Way, who helped organize the whole thing, and John McCarthy from up in Canada joined us. We had a really nice group of people come together for that. Shane Ryan joined us too, as he works for Pace Magazine now and had been working with Digest and had worked on his book, Slaying the Tiger. And we had an awesome time. So I'm really happy to do this again. And we're going to do the same thing again for the U.S. Open this year. We got another house coming together for that as well. So I'm really excited about it. More to come, but that'll be what you can expect next week from me, from Golf News Net, and all that good stuff. You'll see a lot of that, a lot of hashtag blog cabin if you're on Twitter. So I wanted to touch on a couple of things that have kind of come up in the last couple of weeks. We haven't necessarily had a chance to talk about because we haven't done the pod, and some subjects that have kind of come up about the rules of golf, and do we have other team events, and we can kind of go a couple different directions with it, of course. But I first wanted to start with the success that was the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. The horrid, horrid Monday playoff aside, it was awesome. It was super cool to watch team golf, and I'm really glad that the PGA Tour got together on this with Zurich. Zurich has been a really good sponsor. If you don't know, Zurich owns both Zurich Insurance and Farmers Insurance. So they sponsor two tournaments a year. They get Tory, which usually is kind of your unofficial start of the golf season in January, although that's starting to evolve a little bit back into Riviera. But nonetheless, a really good field every year. And they also have put a lot of effort into the Zurich Classic of New Orleans over the, what have they been in, 10 years now or something like that, a sponsor. But they've never really gotten a lot out of it in terms of the field. It's kind of a weird date on the schedule. It's after the Masters, but it's before the Players. And that stretch is usually for journeymen to pick up some points while the better players kind of rest and get ready for the stretch that nowadays begins in May with the Players Championship and leads into Memorial and the U.S. Open, and then we just kind of go down the line from there. And they were able to get their players that they sponsored. I mean, they got Jason Day, and they got Ricky Fowler, and they got Justin Rose, guys like that to come each year. And they got Bubba Watson to come each year because he likes the golf course and has won the tournament. But that was kind of it. And then it was this super top-heavy field, and then it just kind of went after that. And I think for them, probably the last drop in the bucket, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but the willingness to change probably came up last year by having, no offense to Brian Stewart, but have Brian Stewart win the tournament. He played great golf, played bogey-free golf, and won, and totally deserved the win. But they had to go to a Monday finish. It rained a ton. It always rains during this date. So it's kind of difficult to... It's just difficult to justify keep doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same set of results. And you're like, oh, yeah, it's cool. It rained again, so great. Can't wait for that. That's just not worth it. So they made the right change, and they made the right change in format, too. I mean, to go to a two-man event was the right thing. Get some fascinating teams. Hopefully this kind of sets up a little bit of a precedent where – for example, Jordan Spieth and Ryan Palmer, they've said they're going to come back and play together next year. They made a nice charge on Sunday. They came up a little short of getting in that playoff, but they made a good run at it, and it was entertaining enough for them. I mean, certainly entertaining for Spieth. You could tell he was really engaged. He loves team golf. He loves trying to kind of go for it, and he has kind of the green light to do that a little bit more often when it's a team situation, where especially if it's not alternate shot, you know, when you're playing the best ball. You can kind of go that's my favorite format in golf is the four ball, because you can go for it on every hole unless your partner kind of lets you down. Then it's a different challenge. Then you've got to be able to grind it out and save it for the team. So I think that's so much fun to watch, and the guys look like they're having fun, which comes across on television. You don't always get that when you're watching PGA Tour golf from week to week. I mean, they're playing for a lot of money, but they're playing by themselves. It's kind of a lonely existence in the middle of all these thousands and thousands of eyes looking at you doing this something by yourself. You have no one to lean on except your caddy, and they can't hit a shot for you. But in this, you had someone to lean on, someone to talk to that was on your team. You weren't just making small chat with to both get through the nervousness of playing for a boatload of money. It just was better. And I'm not saying that we've got to replicate it. And I think that's kind of the general consensus is we don't have to have like five team events every year. We don't need to do that, but maybe have a different variant on a team event. The European Tour is having something this week called Golf Sixes. There are six hole matches between two-man teams on modified alternate shot, and it's between countries. So you have two-man teams based on country, and you have a group play. They're going to do all the group play in one day, and then they're going to cut it down, and they're going to play a tournament style to get to a winner, and I think that's great. I think that's exactly what that could... It could be a lot of fun. It could be goofballs. But it could be also really fun. The matches will be quick. They'll be to the point. You'll get a winner. And it's a little bit different, again, than what you see week to week. If the PGA Tour wanted to get a little bit more aggressive and go with it again to another team event, maybe they finally put something together with the LPGA, and you have four-person teams either based on country or just personal preference or... whatever it turns out to be. You could have it two different brackets. You could have them working together in a points format. I don't know what it all looks like, but there are a lot of different ways you could do this and it not look exactly the same as the Zurich Classic, because that's exactly the opposite of what we want. We get 72 holes of stroke play almost all the time. There are only, what, like 5 weeks a year where we don't have that. And when you don't have that, it's a little bit of a relief, especially for the players. I'm sure the variety would be nicer. And so I think that's what you can expect in whenever that comes. And it may not come immediately, but I think it's on the horizon, either on the European Tour, because the LET and the European Tour have really gotten together on a couple of things, and they realize they kind of need each other. The LET certainly needs the European Tour, or the LPGA, for that matter, for some help. But I think that's a good thing. And then to have the PGA Tour be able to come in and say, okay, well, we've got this new schedule coming in, it's going to end by Labor Day. So depending on when we want to start the season again, do we give players a genuine off season, which sounds pretty good. I mean, having 45 or 60 days off without PGA Tour golf, and maybe you can kind of ease back into it with the silly season a little bit. Can have some official team events or one official team event and some other stuff to go along with it. I think that would be cool. You could kind of start it off that way. I think that's a good thing. So that's something to explore, but again, don't think it's happening right away. I think once the schedule starts to change and maybe we see that for 2019, then I think that we'll get a sense of the opportunity there for more team golf. But this was a great, great start. The interest was there. More people were watching it. More people were interested in it, at least on television. Not as much interest on the website side of it, but that's fine. You gotta build the interest to it. And I think people who were skeptical about it, particularly in the betting community, where people were reluctant to place money on a team event because you don't know how it's going to go, where there's an extra variable, you've never seen it. But I think people will get behind this a little bit more in all facets of golf and sports as we move forward. So that's great. I also want to talk about the green books. And when the USGA and the RNA came out on Monday while this playoff's going on, and thank God they did to break it up because the playoff golf was awful. I mean, it was awful in every way. For as good as the 4 days of the team golf was, the playoff was just atrocious. I mean, it was just stunningly bad to watch. Nonetheless, got a winner, fine. But the USGA and the RNA are like, hey, you know, we've got a problem in golf. And everyone's like, oh, it's going to be the golf ball. They're going to go after it. You know, the real problem is going to be those different G word, green books. Everyone's like, green books? Where are we talking about green books? But there is a problem. And the folks at Straka, who have come with Straka Line, and they do good stuff. They help map greens. They make understanding green complexes easier. Those are all nice things. But when you see some player get on the green and they're looking over a 10-foot putt, and instead of looking at the putt, they're looking at the green contour map in their yardage book, that to me is a disgusting look. And I mean that, disgusting. Like, if you can't figure out how to read a 10-foot putt without a book in your hand, then you clearly are lacking or want to lack one of the important skills in golf, and that is green reading. And it adds time. You know, it takes 20 or 30 seconds for a guy just in the catcher's mitt position where it's like, oh, well, this map says it breaks a foot over here, so I'm going to trust that, and then I'm going to look at it again, and my eyes will deceive me because I don't see topography, and then I'm going to – it's just like, come on, just hit the putt. And kudos to the USGA and the RNA for saying, all right, we're going to take a look at this. We're going to look at these green reading materials. We don't know if we can enforce some kind of ban or what it's going to look like, but we want to make sure that these guys at a professional level and at a high amateur level aren't creating some kind of trickle-down effect where you have goofball amateurs on the weekends demanding Straka Line maps from their clubs so they can sit there for 5 minutes to read a three-footer and they're still going to miss. I think that's a good thing. And even if they ultimately decide, you know what, it's not that big of a deal. It really isn't a problem. You guys can keep doing this. That's fine, but at least they're making the effort to look at it. I hope that this kind of leads to more examination of these things. But at the same time, you also have to remember they're trying to strike a balance here between things that still promote skill, but also make the game a little bit faster. So a bunch of folks who are turtles and totally happy with green reading books have said, well, the USGA and the RNA are looking into legalizing using distance measuring devices, using laser rangefinders or GPSs during competition. So what's the difference? Like, you're telling me on one hand you can use technology and on the other hand that you can't. And I guess that makes some sense, but there is a totally different calculation in being able to pace off yardage sprinkler heads that are laser etched, or going ahead and using a laser to tell you a number without the slope, and you still got to figure out, even if you know that base number, even if you do the math with your yardage book or you do it with a laser, you still have to decide without a slope calculation, are you hitting flat, are you hitting a little uphill or downhill, is there wind, how is that going to affect it? There's a different set of calculations that go into it beyond just knowing the base number to the flag. And to be totally truthful, more often than not, the flag isn't even relevant for most PGA Tour players. They're not flag hunting most of the time. They're looking for a place to land the ball other than the flag, because obviously it doesn't really go in if you hit the flag that often. So they're looking for another spot to put the ball, and that's why they need yardages that kind of, you have that base yardage, and even if you could scope the pin, that's not necessarily what you need. And then you need to know, okay, well, we've got a slope 4 yards to the left and 2 yards down, that's really what we need to hit. What's that look like instead of going to the pin? Then how do I get there? And all that stuff. That's why looking at a green contour, which tells you exactly what you need to know about the green, all of the perfect information because it's done by laser, that's different than a distance measuring device, which only gives you the first step in a series of calculations every golfer has to make. So taking one step out to make the game a little bit faster, potentially, I'm not saying including or allowing distance measuring devices is going to make golf go from 4 hours to 3.5 hours, hardly. There are a lot of other things in the PGA Tour that can improve the pace of play. Guys can be ready to play, they can put their glove on before they have to hit, they can be ready to go, you know, ready golf, all that stuff that anyone with a brain has been taught to play with golf, you play ready golf. You don't slow roll it. Even if you take 10 practice swings, have had 9 of them done by it's your turn to hit after the next person goes, you know, all that stuff. So there are other ways to reduce the time that it takes to play, particularly at a high level. But I think it's a better look for the game to be able to kind of go through that calculation a little bit more quickly from the fairway or from other shots. And on the green, say, look, this is a skill you got to know. You can't have a map that tells you everything. You need to figure out some of this for yourself. And then that's the starting point. So I'm totally on board with looking at green reading materials and deciding whether or not that's something worth enforcing, either banning or limiting the use of or whatever it is. Not that you can't have them. I still think having that available, having Straka and other companies that measure these greens provide this information for players is good. And they can use them during practice rounds. They can use them to prepare for a golf course they've never seen before. Think about the majors. Those are good things. But to have them during a round, I think, is just a step too far. And it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, in my opinion, to keep that going. And I think that the governing bodies of our sport deserve some credit. And I will continue to say that. I mean, I don't really like what they came up with for the Lexi Thompson decision. I think it muddies things. I think it makes it worse. And I think it actually doesn't really help Lexi Thompson at all. Had we been able to go back into the past with this decision in hand as the law of the game, I don't think it necessarily would have helped her. She still probably would have gotten a 4-stroke penalty. But again, at least they're spotting things that are causing potential problems, that are making golfers kind of recoil and making general sports fans go, what the hell's wrong with golf? And they're trying to come up with answers. And golf still hasn't gotten past the kind of egghead way that it tries to revere existing rules while not dramatically overhauling them in one sense. The kind of the intentional obfuscation of just overhand progress, or just like smash, break a rule and fix it in one fell swoop. Instead, we're like, well, you know, kind of hashtag, well, actually, you know, this rule makes sense for this reason, so we're going to change it over here, and it's going to totally work out. You'll see. And it doesn't always, but at least, again, effort counts for something. For years, the USGA and the RNA would see these horrible things happen, and they're just going, well, that's the rules of golf. See, in 4 years, we come up with new rules. And that's not going to be the case. In 2019, we're going to have 30 different rules. I mean, the game of golf is going to change dramatically, and I've got friends I play with on a regular basis who want to play with 2019 rules today. That has me excited for the future of golf, because hopefully when you get beginners that come to play, and it sounds like there are more and more of them who are interested in the sport, when they come to the course, there won't be a whole lot of, well, actuallys. There will be, this is how you do this. We've simplified things, and this is how it works. That's not a penalty, actually. It used to be, but now it's not. Isn't that great? I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I'm going to come back. This wasn't a disaster. This wasn't horrible. And there are other things we can work on, but getting the rules right, big deal. It means something. So I think that the USGA and the RNA deserve some credit for that. The other thing I wanted to talk about is is the PGA Championship. I kind of want to expand on this idea that is actually a column I wrote earlier in the afternoon today, so it's kind of on my mind a little bit. Otherwise, this is only like a 19-minute show, so I want to kind of verbally expand on this a little bit. And hopefully you'll read it. It's over at golfnewsnet.com. It's about the PGA Championship. And the idea is kind of the argument for the PGA Championship to move to May. So as many of you probably know, the PGA Tour is kind of in this scheduling pickle where they're getting slaughtered now on the FedEx Cup 10 years into it by having four playoff events at the end of September, then usually almost always leads into the Ryder Cup or President's Cup like the next week. So it kind of dilutes those things. And you're like 5 weeks into football season, so no one's really paying attention. And you're giving away $10 million, and people are like, yeah, it's fine, but I got to watch football at 1 o'clock. So hopefully you guys can wrap it up before then, or at least before the 4:25 games, right? And that's a problem, especially now in a contract year with FedEx. They're going to be expected to renew their contract as the overarching sponsor of the FedEx Cup, which is a tremendous financial commitment on their part every year. I mean, they're putting $35 million into the bonus pool for the FedEx Cup. The top 150 players and points get something out of that. They're putting money into advertising otherwise. So, I mean, I don't know what the final figure is, but I imagine they're in for $40 million a year. So, and they're basically the title sponsor of the PGA Tour, if such a thing existed. So for FedEx, they want to make sure that the playoff events get the maximum audience possible, given that they end the season, and that that should be the culmination of the PGA Tour. Yeah, we've got four majors, we've got the players and WGCs, but the last month of the season belongs to FedEx because it's for the FedEx Cup, right? And they want to get maximum bang for their buck. So the PGA Tour is thinking, hey, why don't we go ahead and end our season before Labor Day so we get out of football's way, and we get a good audience for the playoffs. We'll reduce the number of playoff events from 4 to 3 because 4 is too much. Guys complain. We want them to play in all 3 in a row, and it makes it a little bit player-friendly finish to the season. There's less kind of tired golf. There are fewer guys that are just kind of going through the motions because they can get some extra money. You know, it'll reinvigorate the playoffs a little bit. But there's one problem. The PGA Championship is played in the early to mid-August every year. And so the PGA Tour can't start its playoffs until that's done, because you can't make the PGA Championship a FedEx Cup playoff event. That doesn't work. It doesn't kind of fly in the face of having playoffs. And so the PGA Tour needs the PGA of America to be willing to move the PGA Championship from its date. And there's really not anything open except May, where the Players' Championship is. The USGA is not moving from June. They got Father's Day all sewn up. The Open Championship's not moving from July, so you have a couple of choices if you're the PGA and the PGA Tour. You can move to May, which is kind of the idea one out there, the ideal proposal, I guess, is to say, okay, well, we at the PGA Tour will move the Players' Championship from May, where it's done okay, but Sawgrass isn't as great, it's better in March. We're going to go back to where we used to be in March and run the Florida swing out of that, and that'll open up May. And we'll make you the second major. And you'll go up to the Masters. And you can kind of play in your own sandbox as the second major. So you're not Glory's Last Shot, which is kind of your current identity. And you can market yourself as a different major championship. And the PGA is like, wait. If we go last, then if someone ever has a Grand Slam, we're the one they got to finish it off on. That's huge for us. And we like what we've done. August isn't bad. It's kind of the doldrums of the sports calendar. I mean, there's just Major League Baseball games that people sort of kind of care about, but there's really nothing else. I mean, there's training camp that's meaningless, and there's nothing else going on. So why wouldn't we stick with August? And again, on paper, that makes sense. I mean, it does. But the column that I wrote is kind of this argument for why the PGA Championship should move to May and why it's a good idea, because I think it's an opportunity. Yeah, you go second. You're not fourth. So you're not your Glory's second shot. But the good news is you have an opportunity because of where May falls in the United States in terms of our climate, that it opens up some serious opportunities to go to unique places that have never been hosts of majors. So my argument is embrace it and say, okay, well, instead of going to all these golden age architecture places that we leaned on, Donald Ross and you know, McKenzie a little bit, and Tillinghast, and these guys were amazing architects. Save that for the U.S. Open. Let them do that. Let them trick up the old courses that are, frankly, obsolete compared to modern distance. Let them mess with those. Let them do that. You guys, you at the PGA of America, you can be the modern major championship. You can go to places that were built in the last 20 years. You can go to all these places that are part of the second golden age of architecture. You can go to a Cork Crenshaw course. You can go to a Tom Doak design. You could go to a Gil Hanse design, a Tiger Woods design, David McClay Kidd. I mean, the list goes on and on of great current architects who are doing wonderful work around the country. It's not just in the Northeast Corridor. It's not just in the part of the country where it's not stiflingly hot in August. And in May, instead, you can kind of take a chance on some places and you can go unique destinations. And say, and most of these places are resorts or they're semi-public, or you know, you can say, okay, well, let's go to Bandon in May. I mean, Bandon's kind of remote, obviously, but wouldn't Oregon say, hey, you know, we can increase the number of people that come to Bandon if we put a better road in or build some hotels or stuff like that, made it easier to get in and out? Yeah, and I'm sure they would sign up for it. You could do the same thing for Sand Valley in Wisconsin. You could do Prairie Club. There are a whole bunch of good golf courses in kind of the absolute middle of the country that people talk about, but they never talk about as major hosts because they're not in front of a major city. And there are a number of those in, I think about Nebraska and Washington State. You could bring Chambers Bay back. You could go to a Florida golf course. I mean, you could have a major championship at Stream Song in May because it's not a zillion degrees in Florida. You could go to Blue Jack National in Houston, Texas in May because that's a great golf course. Yeah, it's private, but it's a marvel of modern, very modern architecture. And the PGA of America's identity could be, yeah, we were the most friendly championship for a major. We were set up like a PGA Tour event, but a little bit harder. The guys like playing our championship. Well, now they're going to like it even more because they're not going to go to boring they're not going to go to mainstays that they've seen before, or they're get tricked up just to host a major where the members grumble the whole time and all that stuff. We're going to go to a super modern place that maybe they've never seen before, but they want to play because they can't, but they can't because they're in the PGA Tour. They're a professional golfer. They've got stuff to do for their craft and they can't take time out to go play these places. I think that would be great. I think that's a reason to go to May. You can establish that identity. You can go to these places. You can play around a little bit. And I think it would be wonderful. I think truly that's the only way the PGA of America can embrace moving to May. Because you can't go to all these kind of state places in the South, in the Southwest, go out West. I mean, you're just kind of encroaching on the USGA's expanding map, although that's actually contracting back to its kind of original courses in the 2020s, which is an interesting thing to think about, but and especially in the late 2020s. But the PGA of America has this opportunity in front of them to do something unique and special, and I think they should seize it. And I wonder what you think about that. I wonder if that's a legitimate, reasonable argument to be made. I think there are some people who feel that the move to May isn't a bad idea at all, and it has some positives to it, but I haven't heard the spin on it, this way of potentially approaching that. So I'd be interested to hear what you think. So shoot me a tweet, Ryan Ballinger on Twitter. You can hit me with a comment via email, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, or you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you listen to us that way, and we'll read your comment on the air if you give us the 5-star review. So, you know, there's incentive to do that. Next week, again, we're going to be at the Players' Championship. I get down there on Tuesday. We're going to record a podcast on Monday with our buddy Clark Burrows. We're going to talk a little about the fifth major of sorts. And we're also going to do a podcast with Steve Elkington, the 95 PGA champion. We're going to have him on. He's going to be down at the Players with his big show, RV. And we've got a little bit of a partnership with Secret Golf, want some instructional content. So we're going to have him on again. So it could very well be a three, imagine this, 4 podcast week next week from the Players' Championship down at PVB Ponte Vedra Beach in Florida near Jacksonville. So hopefully you're excited about that as I am. I can't wait to get down there and have a fantastic time covering one of my favorite tournaments. It's the first tournament I ever covered that wasn't in the state of Maryland. And I spent my, I can't believe I'm saying this, I spent my spring break in 2003 to go to the Players' Championship that week. I cover a golf tournament for a website I didn't really have, and a podcast that no one listened to. So take that, PGA Tour. Anyway, this time next week, we will be coming to you from Ponte Vedra Beach. I hope you guys have a great enjoyment for this weekend's golf at Wells Fargo. Eagle Point looks awesome. Looks great on TV. If you're getting there in person, we'd love to see your pictures too. Shoot me a note with that as well. And until we are at the blog cabin from Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.